Well, you very wisely found yourself onto the podcast page of Planet. We've got Planet Poetry today coming from the office as usual. I've got two gentlemen staring at me intently. I can hardly see Matthew, though. Matthew Jarvis, are you there?
I am, hiding behind the sunshine.
Yeah, the sunshine is streaming at me and my face is going to be wonderfully tanned at the end of this podcast. But more importantly, we've got Nicholas Murray from Rack Press. Thank you very much for coming in.
It's a great pleasure to come to sunny Aberystwyth.
Yes, but you've come in because you've been listening to a couple of our podcasts and we raised some questions about pamphlet press, how they fit into the world of poetry, didn't we, Matthew? And we were discussing certain questions and we're looking forward to hearing what you've got to say about that. What did we raise, Matthew?
Well, I think we stopped the podcast after a while because we described it as a love-in to Rack Press.
We did.
Because I did enjoy the pamphlets I had a chance of looking at. That they were the 2013 batch. We were talking about pamphlet culture a little more generally in terms of the costs, because one of the questions I raised was about the cost of the volumes. And then that made me realise that I didn't really know enough about pamphlet culture. And I'm aware that it's perhaps had a new liveliness of late, or it seems to be perceived with in terms of a new importance. I hope that's vaguely coherent. So I suppose what we'd like to know, Nick, is in some ways how you see Rack as fitting into pamphlet culture, what contribution you think the pamphlet makes to poetry. But perhaps you could start off by just giving a bit of background about Rack Press itself.
The reason it's called Rack Press is because it's named after the place where I live, in the village of Kinnerton in near Prestine. That's why it's called Rack Press. It was founded, we're going to be celebrating our 10th birthday next year. So I'm astonished that it's been going that long. And Rack, in the Radnorshire dialect, is supposed to mean a straight path or track through the forest.
Okay.
And Rack Lane is where the house is based.
Right.
Why are you astonished that it's lasted 10 years?
Yes, that is a very interesting comment.
Well, because I think there are a lot of small publishers, small magazines, often rise and fall. For example, there's an excellent magazine called Meter, edited by David Wheatley. I say it's excellent because it used to publish my poems. And I was very disappointed when that stopped. I can see why it did. I think sometimes people are just exhausted because running a magazine, I should imagine, is as challenging as running a small pamphlet press.
No comment.
So often there is a sort of a high casualty rate, so to speak. Perhaps that's not right way of calling it. But equally, many magazines and publishers of poetry just keep going and going. But I think it's because it depends. Pamphlet publishing is a very, very small scale activity, and therefore it depends on the commitment and the enthusiasm and the energy of usually one or two people. And that's the weak link, because if you had a team of people, then you could pass on the torch to somebody else. But I fear that if it's Rack Press, will die with me.
you talk about it as being a small scale. Do you see it as a complement to that? Do you see it as a kind of artisan work? You obviously have very particular visual standards in what you put out. Do you see it as a sort of almost a hand-tooled, high-quality, small output? Is that what you're going for?
To a certain extent, yes. And I mean, this is a way of perhaps of picking up your point about the cost of producing them. I felt, in a sense, we're trying to make a virtue of necessity. And these are small pamphlets, these are short-run pamphlets. So we thought, how can we add value, and I hope I mean by that add poetic value, to the pamphlet?
Yes.
And one of the things we do is, it's a limited edition. The first 50 are numbered and signed by the poets themselves. We put a lot of effort into using good quality laid paper. The design, a lot of people comment on the design. It's a very simple and austere design, but that's how I like it. And if you ask me where that came from, I sometimes wonder whether I wasn't influenced when I first started to think about the design of them by some French literary publishers like Éditions de Minuit or Gallimard, who just have very simple, plain covers. In this country, we like to have gaudy covers. And I like the simplicity and austerity of a plain cover.
I mean, it's certainly a striking look. When you're handed one of these, it's quite distinctively rack pressed.
It's something. I'm going to put a little link up next to this podcast because possibly people don't know how they look. So just a note there. Click on the link next to this. You'll see how they look. Sorry to cut across there.
No, that's perfectly okay. That's a very good idea. So what part do you see rack as playing in pamphlet culture more generally? I suppose I'm interested in how you see rack as playing a part in Wales, but also more widely in the UK. Can I throw those two ideas at you?
Yeah, indeed. Well, first of all, I think you're right to use the phrase pamphlet culture. I think there is such a thing. Each year, there's an annual event in London called the Free Verse, where all the small poetry publishers fill the Conway Hall in Red Lion Square. It's an amazing sight on that Saturday to see hundreds of, well, maybe not hundreds, but it can feel like that, table after table after table of small poetry publishers. It's really quite an exciting thing to see all that. There's a lot of activity going on. So there is a pamphlet culture within which we perhaps would situate ourselves. Now, it's interesting that you say Wales, because we're a Welsh press. I don't feel that there's the same volume of poetry pamphlets being published in Wales as in Scotland. Scotland is very strong on them. The Irish pamphlet scene is reasonably substantial, and in England. But for some reason, Welsh poetry publishing hasn't been quite as galvanised by the idea of the possibilities of the pamphlet. Another of our annual sort of celebrations as poetry pamphlet publishers is the Michael Marx Award. The Michael Marx Award is an award annually made specifically for poetry pamphlets. And this year and the previous year, we were shortlisted in the category of Poetry Publisher of the Year. And we were all, each of us was invited to say something about our press. And when I got up at this ceremony in the British Library, I said, it's very striking that we are the only Welsh press to have ever been shortlisted in any of the categories since the inception of this award. And that struck me as being very strange. And that's not because anyone is trying to exclude Welsh publishers. I just think that there aren't sufficient number of Welsh poetry pamphlet publishers who will be entering. We may have been the only people who entered, for all I know.
Well, that's a very interesting point. And I think my sense of it is that you're right about that, that we don't have, although there's a rich poetry culture in Wales at the moment, I don't think we have a particularly strong pamphlet culture. So perhaps if anybody would like to draw our attention to notable pamphlets or any pamphlet publishers we don't know about in Wales, could you get in touch with the podcast?
Yes, we've got plenty of ways to get in touch with us. Obviously, the tweet planet_TWI and an email podcast@planetmagazine.org.uk, because we want to find out if this is true or not. My feeling is, seeing the books that come through the office here to be reviewed, is that Rack Press, to my mind, are the only presence that I can recall at this point. And I just want to ask one question here. Nick, you are self-sufficient. You don't get any support financially whatsoever,
we
do you?
We haven't had a penny of subsidy of any kind. Now, I say that not in some sort of defiant way, as if I don't believe in subsidy. I very much do, and I think it's fantastic that there is public support for the arts. It's just that we haven't found a way to it, partly because I think probably there isn't an easy route. Secondly, as everybody who's put in for funding knows, it's a complicated business. You have to fill in forms, tick boxes, discuss your policies and how you're monitoring your policies. Well, we don't have any policies.
Do you have no policies at all?
Well, I tell you something. It was very interesting. After about our second or third year, a young American poet came over to look at the British poetry scene, and she went around to one or two events, and it just happened to be the week that we were launching our collection in London in the Swedenborg Hall. And she came along and she wrote a rather disobliging blog in which she drew attention to the fact that all the poets were male. It made me think. I thought, gosh, yes, this is probably right. What do we do about this? And for one terrible moment, I thought, do we have quotas? Do we have this, that, and the other? And lo and behold, just thinking about it, just being aware of it, suddenly the problem solved itself, because, of course, there are so many fantastic women poets around. You don't have to sort of scratch your head or go looking. There they suddenly were. And actually, we do have a policy, I think. It's undeclared, but it's implicit, that we try to have a 50-50 gender balance. Mm-hmm. And this year, I'm afraid, we didn't make it because we had three women and one man. I think that's important. It's important to me, you know, as an old-fashioned 1970s male feminist. Those sort of things matter to me.
Yeah,
but perhaps I ought to be thinking about other things like ethnicity, and there's a whole range of things that you could think about in terms of reflecting who you publish. Another thing somebody pointed out to me very recently, was a young poet. He said, oh, you tend to publish a lot of people who are older poets. And just as a critic can sometimes tell you something about your poem that you hadn't realised was there, I suddenly thought, yes, he's probably right. Not that we're in any way ageist. It's just that I think we often like to encourage people who are perhaps late developers as poets. And I think that's a real role that we have played on a number of occasions. We've been the first publication for a number of people who are not like Eric Gregory Award winners, you know, in their 20s. These are people who may be in their 40s, 50s or whatever. And I think that's nice, because there are plenty of prizes and support for younger poets. And this is a way of, this is something we can do. And I quite like the fact that I'm quite proud of the fact that we've done that.
So lack of policy really gives you a broader scope.
Yes, but I've suddenly realised it sounds like we've got a couple of policies.
It does, doesn't it? Yes.
But you see, I'm not going to do it. I remember talking to the poet and publisher Charles Boyle, who is behind CB Editions. CB Editions has been extraordinarily successful. They get books reviewed by Nick Lezard in The Guardian and that sort of thing. And Charles is a character, and he's the moving spirit behind the Free Verse Fair. And I remember sort of chatting to him. Actually, he came to one of our launches, and I was chatting to him about this question of funding. And he gets no public funding. And he said, oh, no, he said, they'd asked me to produce a business plan. He groaned and started to beat his head. Yeah. And I'm afraid our business plan, I can now exclusively share it with the Planet podcast community. Our business plan has the elegant simplicity of our covers. It consists of getting to the end of the year with enough money to pay the printer's bill for the next year. And I'm very proud and pleased to say we do that. That is our business plan.
Yes, yes, quite. I mean, that kind of brings us back to the money issue. And you do sell them at if people buy a whole volume each year, you sell them at a discount initially, don't you?
Yes, I mean each pamphlet is individually priced at £5, so that the four would be 20, but we sell them for 15 if you buy a set. I mean, I do appreciate this, that people might say, well, this is a small entity, small artifact. Why are you charging £5? And we're certainly not making any profit. But if we had some subsidy from somebody, then I think that's the first thing I would do: use it to either lower the price or keep it down in perpetuity. I'm sensitive to that. I think you said on your podcast what the ideal price would be, the price of a pint. It depends whether your pint is consumed in Abba or in Paddington.
Yes,
or
that's a very good
point. Those are Matthew's words. I divorce myself. Yeah,
I think that's a reasonable, a small thing. You think, well, hey, I can get a complete book of poetry for $9.99. They'll actually have a look at the latest Faber Picador volumes, and you'll find that they're creeping up to 12 and more. But it's just simply old-fashioned economics, the economies of scale. If we felt we could sell more, then that price would come down. We'd sell them for a pound. But the reality is that you don't get the turnover. I mean, we could talk about that, about why poetry sales aren't higher. Adrian Mitchell's famous comment about poetry: most people, I'm probably not quoting this verbatim, most people ignore most poetry because most poetry ignores most people. You know, that was his famous one-liner. Maybe some people might say, well, poetry doesn't make itself attractive enough to be sold in numbers. I don't think that's the case. I think there's a problem about distribution and marketing. And if I did get myself, if I did weigh into the funding world, I would be telling the Welsh Books Council to say, look, why don't you fund somebody to go around on the stump pushing small press publications and getting them into the shops? That would be a fantastic help for us. Much better than a direct funding handout.
How important do you think small presses are within the British poetic economy? I don't mean people like Seren, who are obviously bigger. I don't mean established independents. I mean small presses like yourselves.
Well, I think they're very important, and I've already hinted in one way that they can give an opportunity for a new poet to have their first collection, and as it were, a kind of staging post towards a full-length volume. And that's happened at least three times with our poets.
Really?
That's happened.
Interesting.
So I like that idea. However, I enter a note of caution there, because one of the things I try to do in promoting REC is approach various poetry festivals and say, you know, we've got these great poets, they love reading, you know, just say the word and we're yours. And I wrote to the, I better not say who they are, but let's say an eminent poetry festival in Britain. And I got back an email, a rather sniffy email, saying, we have a limited amount of space for poets at the pamphlet stage. And I thought that was an astonishing thing to say, as if somehow a poetry pamphlet is a kind of nursery slope. You put out a pamphlet, but once you've established, you move on. In fact, if you look at our list, the people we publish big names like David Harson, Christopher Reed, Michelle Roberts, and we publish people who are completely unknown, in inverted commas. I hate that phrase. up and coming, emerging,
yes, emerging.
New. Yeah. And we mix it. And one thing I think about Rack Press is, because it's a small, it's just myself and my wife Sue who do it. It's almost like and one or two people have actually said this, it's a little bit like a sort of family. In a nice way, not because we're a clique or we're excluding people, but it's got a human scale. We all talk to each other, and the big names and the unknown people are all treated exactly equally, and they rub shoulders, and it's a nice sort of... one of the benefits of small scale is you get that intimate culture.
I think it was Ros Hudis last time, actually, who was saying... he was talking about pamphlets as a way that experienced writers can try out ideas that maybe don't go to a full collection or don't go as long as a full collection. And so the reaction of your festival contact, who seemed to assume that they were just nursery slope things, as you put it, is a misunderstanding of how pamphlets, of what pamphlets can do.
I'm convinced of that, because I think it's the idea of the small scale, or the small sequence, or a longish poem. By long poem, I don't mean Paradise Lost. I mean, you know, a poem that'll run over 10 pages of text. I think it's just perfect for that kind of purpose. So it's a way of presenting poetry in an interesting way, I think.
And it's also a format where there's no need for anything that might be kindly described as filler. Because it's short, sometimes one gets an impression that with collections, there's a few poems in there where the poet is needing to pad things out a bit, find a bit of length, because they're, maybe their natural length is under the 60-odd pages, which is standard. But in a pamphlet, there's no need for any of that because it's stripped back. It's much shorter. It's a much, much more precise focus, arguably.
I think that's absolutely true. And so you're providing the format that fits that particular piece of work. Not even thinking about trying to expand it unnaturally. It just stops when it's done its work.
And I think this is an important sense in getting away from the idea that a pamphlet is a nursery slope. I'm going to take that phrase of yours and run with it, if that's okay with you.
Oh, please, because I do feel quite strongly. And it's interesting when I talk to a poet, for example, Christopher Reed. We did a little pamphlet of his called Airs and Ditties of No Man's Land, and this was actually the text of a BBC Proms commission, a natural home for this text that had been performed in both
because
cases.
It was freestanding and of a certain length.
Yes, and also it might have got lost.
Well, I think there's also room for specialising. So I think the point that Matthew is making is that you can't have bad poetry in a pamphlet. I think that's totally true because it'll stand out so much, it'll look so much worse than in a longer collection.
Oh, you mean not that it can't happen, but it's lethal when it does.
Yeah, exactly.
It's less.
It's suicide, isn't it? And then what you've built up over the years, well, over a decade, shall we say, almost now. So we'll look forward to that birthday celebration. But what you've done is you've understood that quality is paramount over quantity. So that person who's responded with, you know, you can't have a decent poet who is working within pamphlets, that absolutely ruins that logic, doesn't it?
I think the important thing, for me, the important thing is to make a plea for the pamphlet as not just a start out. Because we do see quite a lot of poets who start out with pamphlets. Yeah. Samantha Winruthers started out with a pamphlet. But she's back with a pamphlet now, a number of full collections later. And she's one of your 2014 pamphlets, isn't she, with Lyme and Winter?
Yes, indeed. And that's excellent and fantastic to do. And then she will do another full-length book. Yeah. You know what I mean?
That's the idea, isn't it?
Effortlessly between the two. One thing I was going to say, there's a little bit of light relief, I suppose, when we were talking about the popularity of the small runs and the limited editions. It reminds me of what Flannery O'Brien said about why limited editions of poetry were so popular. He said, it's because poetry is so popular it has to be rationed. Well, I wish we could sell, you know, 1,000 copies.
Well, I rather like the idea that George Bernard Shaw said that he was writing a letter one time and he apologised to the recipient of the letter that he wanted to write a shorter letter, but he didn't have the time. It takes an awful lot more craft to create something small and beautiful.
In terms of selling out, I noticed that the Ian Parks Cavafy Variations has sold out, hasn't it?
You'd be surprised how many have. So maybe, and occasionally we do have a slightly longer print run if we think it's going to sell out. Yeah, the Cavafy Variations is good. It had a fantastic review in the TLS. And that's another thing, actually, I ought to say about the reviews. We've been very, very fortunate, I think. When we launched, it was at a time when The Guardian made a point on their, as it were, their poetry page of reviewing small presses. Sadly, about a year ago, they stopped doing that. But on two occasions, Rat Press pamphlets were reviewed in The Guardian. You know, that's astonishing. And a number of people said to me, the poet Richard Price said to me, he said, oh, you're punching above your weight. And I said that. I think that's a kind of slightly ambivalent thing. I'm still trying to work out whether that was a compliment or not. But it is extraordinary that such a tiny outfit has managed to get reviewed and get noticed, because I don't have any personal entree to the great and good of the literary world. So it's just by sending things out and putting them in front of people. And what was nice was that the poets, the more big-name poets, if you like, found their way to us. We didn't go running after them. They approached us, and I thought that was nice. Because I wouldn't sit there and think, "Oh, let's have somebody famous next year." I just wouldn't think like that. But if somebody comes along and they put a nice idea in front of me, then I think, "Okay, let's do that."
So, what are your selection procedures? So, obviously, some people come to you, and presumably, people send in manuscripts.
They do. It's been a very, very interesting experience for me. Being a gamekeeper when I used to be a poacher. The ones I've been writing poetry all my life, and I used to send them off, as everyone does, and they'd come back. Sometimes, if you were lucky, they wouldn't come back. And when I started out, I remember thinking, oh, dear me, am I going to be deluged with large numbers of submissions that are hopeless? Nobody prepared me for the reality, which was large numbers of submissions that are really, really good. And I am actually turning away, it's painful, turning away really good work because we just simply can't do it. We don't publish enough pamphlets in the year. I could double the number of pamphlets easily. So that was a revelation to me.
At this point, the obvious question is, could you not double your output? I don't mean at the same time, but instead of only publishing in January, could you not do January, July, January, July?
Yes, it is a practical decision, really, to do it like that. In fact, we have gradually started to do what I call to myself extras. So, for example,
the Harsent was
and what was an extra, because that was premiered at the Albury Festival in the summer. So we thought we got it out quite quickly, and I want to do more of that. But the reason for the 4 a year is partly that we've made a point from the beginning, and I think this has worked, of having a bit of a party, a bit of a special launch. And when we did this in January, we hired a hall in London in Covent Garden. We had 70 people there. Now, for a tiny little press, that's pretty good. As you know, poetry events sometimes have fewer than that. But to do more than we do does raise questions about the ability of me to do it when I'm trying to do a whole range of things. I teach, I write books, I write poetry myself.
Exactly.
You know, there's a limit to what you can do without overtaxing yourself.
Yeah,
But to which the answer might be, of course, get some funding and then you can hire some help and whatever. But
yeah, then you get into that mess you were referring to right at the beginning, that virtue of necessity. You have an idea that doing more is better, but look at the pamphlet, more is not always better. It's human nature, isn't it? Everybody likes a free spirit, some, you know, sort of notion of romance. I don't mean in that in the traditional sense. I mean, you know, a romantic lifestyle. There's something of that in a small press, in the pamphlet. You know, everything you've mentioned, or we've mentioned today, that's vaguely negative, has been kind of trade standard, industry standard, hasn't it? You know, a pamphlet, nonsense at a festival. Spinners, you know, people bringing their own stuff to sell their books. This is industry stuff. That's all about the bottom line. When you remove the bottom line, suddenly you're inspired and you get great product.
Exactly, and the cash nexus, as Carlyle put it, could go to hell. We just do what we want.
I do think what's been very interesting about the discussion has been this sense that the pamphlet has exciting roles to play. And to me, as someone who's interested in a range of poetry across the UK and different formats, but I confess my knowledge of the pamphlet scene is probably not what it should be. It's this sort of discussion that pulls me back to the sense of, well, go away and read some more, Matthew. Go away and find out some more. Go to the exciting websites that are looking at pamphlets, like Sabotage is one of the big ones at the moment, isn't it?
But you can't be blamed for not being aware of it, because I mean, I'm not. It's so diverse, and there are so many of them, that you couldn't possibly keep tabs on it all. It's just bursting out all over.
And I think it is true that it's much less of an extent in Wales, I think, than the rest of the UK.
I mean, it'd be very interesting to hear people's feedback. We said that earlier, but let's stress that again.
Yeah, get in touch. Podcast@planetmagazine.org.uk or tweet us @planet_TWI or go and find us on Facebook.
And I think we set up a hashtag last time, #PlanetMagPoetry.
#PlanetMagPoetry. Yes, we did. Thank you for that, Matthew. We better close up there. We have heard a lot about Pamphlet in the poetry scene. A lot more knowledgeable now. Thank you very much, Nick. That's great stuff. Hopefully the listeners, have enjoyed it as much as Matthew and I have enjoyed it. So first thanks goes to you, Nick. Thanks a lot for coming in.
And I think Nick should be just given the chance to say where people should get in touch if they want to buy Rack Press volumes.
Yes. The best way to do it is to go to our website, which is www.rackpress.blogspot.com, and you see the bright, encouraging yellow PayPal sign. You punch the button and it's yours. We dispatch them very quickly because I have a direct hotline to the director of dispatch.
Oh, it's a red hot glowing
phone. He's very responsive and always listens when I tell him to put that in an envelope. We do have a quick response rate.
One quick question, but let's not drag this on. Digital copies, are you interested in that at all?
Well, I won't say I ruled it out. Yeah. I mean, but a lot of our discussion has been about the pamphlet as an attractive physical object for reading poetry in. And of course, if you're reading it on the iPad,
it's not a pamphlet anymore, is it?
But I don't rule it out at all. Mm. There are some people who prefer to do that, and it's a way of lowering the cost, of course. So, no, our minds are completely open on that score.
So watch that space.
Watch that space.
Thank you very much, Nick.
Yes, thank you very much. And thank you very much to you as well, Matthew. It's a great pleasure, as always, bringing your wonderful brand of knowledge into the Planet Office.
Your irony, Dev. Thank you very much.
Last thanks goes to you, dear listener. Thank you for lending us your ears, even. And hopefully you'll be back soon. And before you do that, click on the link near this to go and find Rack Press poetry. I'm sure you'll enjoy this year's collection. We'll be looking at that very soon. Thank you and goodbye.